Day one of mandatory minicamp in the books for the Baltimore Ravens. We talk about news, notes, and more next year on Locked On Ravens.
You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. Of course, we're here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Ravens your first listen of the day. We're free and available on all platforms. And today's episode of Locked On Ravens is brought to you by Blue Nile. Make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com. And Locked On Sports listeners get $50 off of purchases of $500 or more. This podcast exclusive includes engagement, so use code Locked On at checkout. But we're back, a midweek edition, and it's an exciting one today. The Ravens, of course, wrapped up day one of their mandatory mini camp yesterday. They had media day on Monday, so they had the guys in their pads. It was great to see like guys like J.K. Dobbins and Ronnie Stanley out there in their pads for media day. Obviously, hopefully those guys recover soon and are back on the field healthy soon at 100%. But there were a lot of news and notes to take away from day one of minicamp. We're going to be diving into all of those in the second segment. In the first segment, I do want to talk a bit about Derek Wolfe and his situation. Long story short, the Ravens reached an injury settlement with Wolfe, so he is no longer a part of the roster. We'll talk about what this means for the team, the depth on the defensive line, just Derek Wolfe's tenure in general, and just the mysteriousness behind it and more in that first part of the show. And then the final part of the show, we will talk about mailbag questions. We got a couple of really good ones to dive into there. So again, so much to talk about here today on the show. But if you're here with us in video form on YouTube, be sure to like this video, subscribe to the channel. We're growing so fast on YouTube, and it's a really great thing to see. And thank you to everybody who shows support and subscribes to this channel here on YouTube. And if you're thinking about subscribing and you're wondering why, well, we put out daily Ravens content 5 days per week, Monday through Friday. So if you want Ravens news, Ravens opinions, Ravens analysis, we're here for you 5 days a week. So be sure to hit the subscribe button, hit the like button as well. Also in audio form, we're growing super fast on there too. So if you're listening on your way to work or on your way from work, thank you for tuning in audio form. Be sure to follow us anywhere you get your podcasts. So Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, the whole nine yards, we're there. Also be sure to, again, follow us and be sure to turn notifications on. And be sure to follow me on Twitter too at KSharker34 and the Locked On Ravens account at Locked On Ravens. But let's now dive into the Derek Wolfe situation. Again, yeah, Derek Wolfe no longer a part of the team. The Ravens reaching an injury settlement with Derek Wolfe, and pretty much what I presume could have happened here, and again, nothing confirmed, but the Ravens could have said, hey, look, we're just going to put Derek Wolfe on the non-football injury list because of the whole bear thing. And the Derek Wolfe camp said, well, maybe can we settle in the middle because this whole thing happened. So that's one possible situation of what happened. So the Ravens maybe paid out a bit of money. Derek Wolfe maybe gave a little bit of money back. So there should be a bit of cap relief. And there could have been 10 different directions, 20 different directions this whole thing could have gone in for the Ravens and for Derek Wolfe. And there could be 10 or 20 different reasons. Maybe it had nothing to do with the whole black bear picture. For those who don't know, Derek Wolfe posted a picture on Instagram a couple weeks ago, I think it was, of him pretty much hauling a black bear on his back that he had hunted. And a 300-pound bear. And with the hip surgery, he had a second hip surgery. And yeah, again, it's kind of like Kaji Ismail came on here on Friday and talked about, well, we got to figure out the bear first. And I had said on Monday's show that one of the big storylines was Derek Wolfe. And if we would find out something about his situation, well, we certainly found out something about it. And that is he is no longer on the team. So it's an unfortunate situation. Again, I wish Derek Wolfe the best and hope he recovers well. It was a very mysterious, odd situation, though, surrounding Derek Wolfe. And that's why there's still so much mystery about just how this went down. Was it about the bear? it's a bunch of everything that could have gone into it. But Wolfe was a player the Ravens ended up signing after the Michael Brockers deal didn't go through. The Ravens signed Brockers to a 3-year, $30 million deal alongside bringing in Calais Campbell via trade that offseason. But then there was a failed physical, or not a failed physical, but they didn't like the way that something looked. And so they ended up offering less money, and then Brockers didn't accept that. He ended up going back to the Rams and then actually traded to the Lions. So now that whole situation is done. But the Ravens ended up bringing in Wolf to kind of replicate or replace the role that Brockers would have played. And it was a solid deal at the time. It was only a 1 year, $3 million contract. So they were getting a solid player, but who had injury concerns before. Now, Wolf in 2020 played really, really well. He was one of the best run stuffers in the NFL. Also, something that he's very good at is opening up pass rush lanes for other people. So he will take on a double team. An outside linebacker can stun around and just shoot through that gap. And Von Miller talked about how Derek Wolfe was responsible for a decent amount of his sacks just because of the space he took up. And Derek Wolfe, he only had one sack in 2020. It wasn't like he was a pass rushing superstar that year. But again, he was a solid player, played in most of the games, and was just an overall reliable player. And so when the Ravens re-signed him in the 2021 offseason, people were super excited. It was, all right, the Ravens are getting this super reliable run defender. Maybe there could be a couple more sacks he gets. But the deal that he signed was a three-year, $12 million contract. And that seemed like a bargain for a player coming off of the year that Derek Wolfe had. A lot of people wanted him back in Baltimore. But then the Ravens went to joint practices with the Carolina Panthers, and Wolfe suffered a hip/back injury and ended up going on IR. And it's weird because the Ravens actually designated him to return from IR. I don't know how many people remember this, but the Ravens actually designated him to come back. And then a couple of days later, maybe it was a week, I can't remember the exact time frame, John Harbaugh said, yeah, he's going to miss the rest of the season. So after he was designated to return, the Ravens had 21 days to activate him off of injured reserve. But then ultimately, he just stayed on there and missed the full season. Then he announced that he had hip surgery. The first one, that was a couple months ago. And then just a couple days ago, he announced that he had his second hip surgery and now no longer a part of the team. And again, it is unfortunate because I think when healthy, Wolf could have provided something to the Ravens, something valuable on the field to the Ravens in 2022. But at this point, what does it mean for the defensive line room? It means that there's an extra spot open now. It also makes maybe a bit more sense, if this was something the Ravens were thinking about, why the Ravens brought in Jason Pierre-Paul, someone who can play both standing up at outside linebacker and with a hand down at the defensive end, defensive line position. He played a lot of defensive line during his time in New York. And then with Tampa Bay, he kind of stood up a lot more. So it makes a little more sense maybe why they would want that versatility in a Jason Pierre-Paul if that's who they end up bringing in. But again, we've had that conversation about pass rushers over the past couple of days. But Derek Wolfe now, with his departure, it opens up playing time for guys like Justin Madubuike and Travis Jones, potentially Brent Urban as well. That was now hindsight, you're looking at it, you're saying, all right, well, the Ravens, they have depth there. And even I was kind of going back and forth with what the roster looks like with Derek Wolfe and without Derek Wolfe. And now obviously it is without, but even without Derek Wolfe, before we knew this was happening, I was still confident in the defensive line group, because after the second hip surgery, you're kind of thinking, well, is he even going to play again ever? Like, is this it? Is he going to retire at this point? We don't know what his next career move will be at the NFL level. But now with Calais Campbell and Justin Madubuike and Broderick Washington and Brent Urban and Michael Pierce, who we'll talk a bit about in the second segment, you know, and other guys too, they have so much depth there that I wasn't necessarily overly concerned that if Derek Wolfe were to, you know, get cut or get traded, or now with the injury settlement, they would have a weakness there. I still think it is a strength. Derek Wolfe, if he wasn't 100% healthy, he wouldn't have been an asset on the field. We saw that with Ronnie Stanley in 2021 in that Las Vegas Raiders game in week one. He was out there. He wasn't 100%, and his play wasn't great there because he was not feeling like himself. It didn't help him. It didn't help the team. So at this point, it seemed like the Derek Wolfe situation was one that was going to get a resolution one way or the other at this time. It was, well, he's either going to show up or he's not going to show up, and the Ravens will excuse him for that because of the hip surgery, or they'll just trade him, or they'll just cut him, or there'll be an injury settlement. So what ends up happening is the injury settlement. It's not known, at least I haven't seen at this time, what the money will be in terms of cap savings. I assume there will be some, maybe it's minimal, but that contract was guaranteed. So it wasn't like the Ravens would have saved any money by cutting him outright, and a trade probably wasn't likely to happen just because I don't know what team's looking for a second hip surgery, 30 plus veteran guy who, again, coming off this two hip surgeries, you don't know, you can't trust that. So I think this was the best move for both parties at the end of the day. I think, again, it opens up a spot. And while Wolf would have provided something on the field, there was too much mystery, too much uncertainty. And I think now the Ravens are better off moving on, just kind of cutting that page out and saying, you know what, He had a great 2020 season. It's unfortunate the whole thing happened and the whole situation was what it was. But again, it was what it was. He posted the bare picture that caused a lot of controversy in terms of, well, he should be healthy now. And then he comes up with a second hip surgery. And all of a sudden it's like, well, hold on a second. Why were you carrying the bear? So all different types of things to talk about there with the Derek Wolfe situation. But at the end of the day, Derek Wolfe no longer a part of the team. It opens up more roster spots, more roster space, and more snaps for younger guys and guys who are looking to prove themselves over the course of this 2022 season. So Derek Wolfe had a nice 2020 in Baltimore, but it ended up being just 1 year of production for the veteran in a Ravens uniform. We'll head into our first break here, though, on Locked On Ravens. Still a ton to talk about. We'll dive into notes, news, and more from minicamp, day one of minicamp for the Baltimore Ravens coming up soon. So be sure to stay tuned. Still a ton to talk about on Locked On Ravens. First, though, I do want to tell you a bit about Blue Nile. And whether you're ready to pop the question or you're celebrating a milestone moment, find jewelry as unique as her with the modern convenience of online shopping at BlueNile.com. Blue Nile has simple online tools that you choose the diamond shape, size, and clarity, as well as setting style. Blue Nile's bench jewelers will then handcraft the perfect engagement ring. Each ring is one of a kind. If you're looking for fine jewelry but are having trouble choosing, Blue Nile has jewelry experts on hand 24/7. They're available via phone or even chat to help find a memorable gift at every budget. So make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com, and Locked On Sports listeners get $50 off of purchases of $500 or more. This podcast exclusive includes engagement. Use code Locked On. That's code Locked On. Plus, every order is insured, ships free, and arrives in discreet packaging. It won't give away what's inside. So shop stress-free and find your forever piece. Go to BlueNile.com today. We're back here. Our second segment of Locked On Ravens here on Wednesday. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still here with you again. Thank you so much for making Locked On Ravens your first listen of the day. Be sure to subscribe on YouTube and follow us anywhere you get your podcasts in audio form as well. But yeah, day one of minicamp in the books. Now it's day two here today. We'll get more news, more videos, pictures, and all the like from everybody who's at minicamp, the Ravens social team, etc. But there was a lot to dive into, to break down from minicamp on day one. And two decently big storylines were the fact that, one, Michael Pierce was not there. And John Harbaugh talked a bit about it, said he understands the situation. It is what it is. And he's kind of working through something right now. So, you know, it was a personal matter, John Harbaugh ended up saying. So, again, we don't really know what that is at this point. Maybe we'll know what it is at some point. Maybe we won't, but John Harbaugh did say it is what it is. So we'll see. It's, I guess, a tiny bit concerning, but at the same time, hopefully he'll be able to show up soon and everything's okay with him. That's the main thing. Hopefully everything is okay. The second part is that Marcus Williams is only able to participate in individual drills. And John Harbaugh did say he was working through something physically, just trying to get back and get back right. So for John Harbaugh, again, it's something that he didn't see overly concerned about, said that he believes at least it wasn't a long-term or isn't a long-term thing for Marcus Williams. So I think that, again, not something I am overly concerned about right now, but at the same time, I just say something to keep an eye on overall, because you never know with these things. Sometimes the injuries are, they start off looking minor and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's a little more serious than we thought. So hopefully this is not that case. Again, with John Harbaugh's comments, it didn't seem like he was too worried about it. And yeah, we'll see what ends up happening throughout the rest of the week. And if he's only limited to individual drills throughout the rest of the week, then hopefully he'll be able to come back at training camp and be 100% as he kind of gets through, you know, the physical thing that he's going through. So those were kind of some of the bigger storylines from minicamp day one. Obviously also the Derek Wolfe thing we talked about, but the Ravens had 81 of their 90 guys on the practice field, according to Jess Rebick at The Athletic, and he put together a list. He said not practicing was J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, Ronnie Stanley, Tyus Bowser, David Ajabo, Marcus Peters, Ardarius Washington, Michael Pierce, and Derek Wolfe. So I guess you could say it was 81 of 89 players on the practice field, because Derek Wolfe, I guess, no longer on the team at this point. But the only one who wasn't participating because of a non-injury type thing was, or at least undisclosed at that point, was Michael Pierce. The other guys are obviously recovering from their injuries. You have Dobbins and Edwards with the ACL. Same thing with Marcus Peters, Ardarius Washington with a foot, Bowser and Ajabo with Achilles, Ronnie Stanley with the ankle. So hopefully all those guys, again, get back full strength, but it's not a surprise to see those guys still recovering, still not on the practice field. But again, hopefully they can come back soon and that will be that. But observations from people who were there, Jeff Rubik saying that Lamar Jackson did look comfortable and he threw the ball pretty well, although he was intercepted twice, both times by the same player, and Mr. Tony Jefferson. And Jefferson, we know what he did. He came on and he played really well when he was asked to do so after kind of bouncing around after his time with the Ravens. And he had that serious injury during his time with the Ravens, wasn't really able to latch on anywhere else, but he came back, played really well. That tackle on the, what was it, a 2-point conversion, I believe, against the Rams. It was incredible, just kind of bulldozed through the one guy. So Jefferson, he seems like he could get some snaps, even though the Ravens did have or do have a bunch of really, really good safeties. But also, it wasn't just Jefferson who got in on the interception party. I know a lot of people will be excited to hear this. Kyle Hamilton had an interception on Tyler Huntley. It wasn't on Lamar Jackson, but still already making his presence felt. I have such high hopes for Kyle Hamilton. I know a lot of others do too, but I'm very excited to see what he brings to the table. And the Ravens also had a couple guys try out. They had veteran pass rusher Steven Means there. Means spent a couple of years with the Ravens back in like 2014, 2015, that time frame. Offensive lineman TJ Stormont was there, and also long snapper Alex Matheson. So three guys on the tryout part of things, and that was good to see. But the official stats, or I guess I'll call it, Jonah Schaefer called them unofficial. Jonah Schaefer, the Baltimore Sun, said Lamar Jackson's unofficial stats were 17 to 26 and 11 on 11s, including two interceptions, both of those obviously by Tony Jefferson. Then 10 for 10 and 7 on 7s. He also said the tight end shined on the offense and the safeties shined on the defensive side of the ball. So, yeah, this year for the tight ends, we know who Mark Andrews is, right? One of the best in the league. But the other guys, Nick Boyle, Charlie Kohler, Isaiah Likely, all three of those guys have such potential on the offensive side of the ball, especially because you're looking at the Ravens, at least in my personal opinion, probably keeping five wide receivers at this point, as of this moment. Obviously, they could change that. Maybe a veteran comes in, or there are a couple undrafted guys that shine. But right now, with the way that the Ravens offense might look to go back to bully ball, I think you could look at this offense and say, not just Mark Andrews, but Boyle, Kohler likely have the potential to do great things. And also, Josh Oliver appeared to pull up on a route over the middle, and Jefferson was there to grab the pass. So these are both of Jefferson's interceptions. Then the second interception, Jefferson stepped in front of an intermediate route by Rashad Bateman, who had a nice day otherwise. So good to hear Rashad Bateman doing well. That's Baltimore's number one receiver. So he's someone who's going to have to step up in a big way. So I'm excited to see what Bateman ends up bringing to the table. And again, a lot of people are. Also, Jeremiah Moon apparently had a very, very good day. And in the first 11-on-11 session, beat Tyler Linderbaum for a sack. And Lamar Jackson was looking for something to develop downfield, and he ended up getting sacked by Jeremiah Moon at this point. And he was one of the top Ravens undrafted free agents through OTAs and the one-day minicamp, according to Jonas. So good insight there. And then Kyle Barber also had some insight from Baltimore beatdown. Tylan Wallace had to play a practice, according to him. He had a double move on Brandon Stevens, was wide open for a Tyler Huntley touchdown pass, and Lamar Jackson's first pass in red zone drills was a 10-yard pass to Rashad Bateman. And also, you can guess who Lamar Jackson's favorite target was. It's not super hard. It's not a trick question. Mark Andrews. He caught numerous balls over the middle in stride. And also, with Kyle Hamilton's interception, a bit more detail on that Kyle had here. He said he read a Tyler Huntley pass to a wide receiver on the left side, jumped the route, and caught it falling down. And I think that Kyle thinks that he was a bit too early, which is why he ended up losing his footing. Also, Dalen Hayes continues to impress Kyle here, as he says that he needs to see him going full speed in pads, but at this point, that's what Kyle's looking for. And then also, Kyle said that Jackson threw the ball well, but there were a pair of overthrows to Bateman and some receivers deep, along with the two interceptions that Tony Jefferson had. And Kyle also saw some screen passes. I know people have been clamoring for the screen passes a little bit, get the screen game going, and that's an extension of the run game. The short passes, the screen passes, that is an extension of the run game, but it keeps defenses on their toes. So I'm very excited to see if they can integrate that into their offense a bit. And then also you have Charlie Kohler, who had a wide open reception, broken coverage, and the ball floated for a 15 to 20 yard gain. And so, yeah, there were a lot of good things to take away from this practice overall. And when looking at just how this can progress over the next couple of days, it's guys impressing, guys proving that they deserve snaps, guys proving they deserve roster spots. I mean, there were also players, coaches who spoke. You had John Harbaugh speaking, Calais Campbell speaking, Mark Andrews, and the whole thing was they're excited Lamar Jackson is back. It's a big thing, and yes, I am also excited Lamar Jackson is back as well, and it's big for him to get these snaps, get these reps. I wasn't really concerned he was going to miss mandatory minicamp. I know some people were, but you know, he's somebody who's competitive, and it wasn't necessarily contractually for me with him in terms of why he didn't show up to mandatory minicamp. He'll talk on Thursday, so we'll see what he has to say about it, if he has anything to say about it at the end of the day. But you know, Mark Andrews saying Lamar Jackson had an impressive arm today, tight spirals, and that Calais Campbell said that Baltimore was the right place for him. So there's a bunch of really nice quotes, tidbits from these players talking about some of their teammates, talking about Baltimore in general, the team. And look, this team has a goal, right? It's to win the Super Bowl. And I think they can get there with the right preparation. Obviously, health is a big factor in there too. There are so many just little factors that go into a Super Bowl season. And some are bigger than others, but I think that these snaps in rookie minicamp, snaps in OTA, snaps in minicamp as well, just mandatory, it's all big. It all goes into the same goal, and it all helps out. So day one in the books, day two today, and day three tomorrow. So still a ton of minicamp content to dive into, a ton of minicamp things to talk about here. But day one seems to be a pretty big success for the Ravens, so that's something I'm very, very happy about. We'll dive into a lot more coming up in our final break here. When we get back here from our final break, we'll be diving in to mailbag questions. So be sure to stay tuned for our final part of the show. Still a ton to talk about here on Locked On Ravens. First, though, I do want to tell you a bit about Built Bar. And sometimes, you know, there are a lot of things that Built Bar does that can just be amazing. And they're always coming out with new, amazing flavors. And this time, they've truly outdone themselves with their new Mud Pie flavor. And for the first time ever, Built's introducing the new Mud Pie flavor in both the Mud Pie Bar and the Mud Pie Puff. Well, if you're not sure what Mud Pie tastes like, if you're a chocolate fan, you better sit down for this one. The new Mud Pie Bar is rich whipped cream and chocolate mousse. It's more than 100% real chocolate and topped with cookies and cream crumbles. So much flavor in these bars. You got to get them as soon as possible. You need to hurry too, because the Mud Pie Bar and the Mud Pie Puff are only available for a limited time. Visit built.com to taste the deliciousness for yourself. And like all Built Bars, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. That means they're healthy and tasty. You're going to love them. They're really, really, really good. And if you need a snack for your workout, a late night treat, or just need to grab a quick bite, Built is the perfect protein bar, and they taste better than a candy bar. So go to built.com, use promo code LOCK15, get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. We're back here. Our final segment of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher, your host, still here with you. Again, thank you so much for making Locked On Ravens your first listen of the day. Be sure to subscribe to this channel. Also, like this video on YouTube, and be sure to follow us in audio form. And also be sure to make your second listen Locked On NFL. If you missed my Monday episode on there, I hosted that show. It was a really great when we talked about the Rams and how they can spend all that money. So be sure to tune into that. But let's answer some mailbag questions now. We got three really good ones here I'm going to dive into. The first one coming from Afi DeFoy, who asks, "Hey, Kevin, thanks for the show and your work. In your opinion, what is the ranking of the biggest rivalries for the Ravens within and outside our division? Have a nice day." And thank you for your kind words there. But this is a really good question. And I think, obviously, over the course of the Ravens franchise history, rivalries have changed. But some things have remained constant. Obviously, the Titans were a huge rival of theirs early on. That kind of died down a little bit, but it's creeped up a lot more in recent years, obviously, with the logo thing. I don't think it's ever really gone away. But back in the Ray Lewis, Eddie George days, I mean, that was a very, very big rivalry. Pittsburgh is one that I think has never gone away. It never will go away. The rivalry has changed. You know, we're not with the Hines Wards and the Ed Reeds and Ben Roethlisberger now gone from that rivalry too. There are a lot of players, Troy Polamalu, that, you know, really define that rivalry, and even guys like Jerome Bettis, et cetera. But I still think it's a very big rivalry. And if I had to pick, I'd still put the Steelers at one. I mean, it's a team that, like, you know, if you're a Ravens fan, you don't like the Steelers. If you're a Steelers fan, you don't like the Ravens. There's a lot of respect on both sides. Like I respect what the Steelers do in terms of how successful their franchise has been. And I respect Mike Tomlin as a coach and a lot of different things that organization has done in terms of personnel decisions, in terms of trades and free agents and stuff, and just how that whole thing happens. But again, it's not like I'm sitting over here saying, "Oh yeah, like go Steelers," right? There is a mutual dislike from both fan bases, and I think that is the number one rival in division. Number two, I think it is the Browns. I know there's a lot of history between the Ravens and the Browns, with obviously the franchise moving over to Baltimore in 1996 and that whole thing starting. So I think that the Browns are still the number two rival right now, but the Bengals have been on their tail because of the whole, it really just like the last year. Yeah, you have Joe Burrow and the two blowouts that happened, and the Bengals with their very successful 2021 season making it to the Super Bowl. There's a lot of, I think, rivalry things brewing within Ravens and Bengals and those teams. So I'd rank it Steelers, Browns, Bengals in terms of rivals. But, you know, I don't think that these division games are any less important just because rivalries have changed, right? Still super physical, still super tough. And so I think that for me, I think, again, the Ravens respect the Steelers respect the Ravens, and there are a lot of things to respect about both franchises. But at the end of the day, I think the Steelers are number one. Then you have the Browns at two and the Bengals at three. Outside of the division, I mean, the Titans are one that I think is one of the bigger ones. The Patriots have been a team that's been going back and forth with the Ravens for many years, especially during the Tom Brady days, Brady not there anymore. But, you know, I think that's a rivalry that without Brady, it still kind of dies down a little bit, but still that's a rival. I think Kansas City has turned into a minor rival over the past couple. The Ravens played them so many times over the past four seasons that, you know, all of a sudden it was, oh, well, the Ravens have to get the Chiefs or the Ravens kryptonite and everything. And the Ravens finally beat them in week two of 2021. So those are the teams right now that I think are the biggest rivals. I know some people might point to the Bills as well with Josh Allen there. I don't see that necessarily as a rivalry. I think that's more of a rivalry of the better, like who's the better quarterback debates between Jackson and Josh Allen. And I know that obviously Bills fans believe it's their guy. Ravens fans believe it's their guy. I'm on Lamar Jackson train there, but I think that for the Ravens and just what ends up happening with all these rivalries over time, it's not like they stay the same. Players go in, players go out. And so that's my answer. I think that for the division, it's Steelers number one. And for outside division, you know, maybe it is Titans at this point. Maybe it is Patriots, or maybe it is Chiefs. I think any of those three. But I think the most history has been with the Titans in terms of outside rivals in the AFC. Our second question here, it comes from Gunny Ravens, who asks, though there is familiarity with Chuck Clark wearing the green dot, how likely would it be for the new defensive coordinator to transfer the responsibilities to the rookie Kyle Hamilton? What would the rookie need to show to prove he is worthy of being the QB of the defense? And yeah, it is an interesting situation, an interesting spot the Ravens are in right now. I think because of just what the situation is with Chuck Clark. Is this a situation where he is going to want to be traded? Or is he fine contractually? Is he fine personnel-wise and he's going to play? I think that's a big part of this. So if Clark were to leave, it's important to get other guys, I guess, like up to date on green dot responsibilities. I think it'd be a little hard to give a rookie the green dot in year one. That's not me. That's not a slight at Kyle Hamilton. I think he's very smart, has a very high football IQ, but it's being familiar in this defense with the new defensive coordinator is the question mentions. Again, you got to be a bit familiar with everything that goes on. I don't think the defense is going to completely change where everything 100% is different. So I think having Chuck Clark there, the familiarity is a huge thing. But I think that if Hamilton proves in his rookie season that he understands the defense, not a lot of mental mistakes, he's in the right spots that he needs to be in, that will give the coaching staff trust, especially if he shows it in games. You know, it's one thing to show it in mini camp or training camp or the preseason. If you can show it in games, pressure situations, you're lined up right, you're able to get guys lined up, and maybe the Ravens slowly try to give Kyle Hamilton a bit more responsibility over the course of the year. Maybe they try it with Patrick Queen. I don't know, but I think Chuck Clark right now is the biggest glue guy on this defense because of his ability to wear the green dot and line guys up and know everything that's going on. So that's a very important spot, you know, who wears the green dot, who gets everybody right. For now, it is Clark, but I think, yeah, maybe in the next couple of years, if Hamilton shows that he can do that and is responsible for that and Chuck Clark ends up departing, I think it definitely could be a Hamilton thing. Maybe even as soon as the second season, maybe earlier, maybe the Ravens surprise me and do that. I don't know if they'd give it to a rookie outright off the bat. That's just where I'm looking at. But I think the Hamilton has the potential to definitely be one of the quarterbacks, if not the quarterback, of this Baltimore Ravens defense. And then finally, we'll look at a question from Alex Schultz, who says, really looking forward to J.K. Dobbins getting back on the field. How long do you think it will take him to get back to being fully comfortable on the field? Yeah, this one depends. Every situation is pretty different when you're talking about injuries, and I know I've said that before. But with ACLs, the recovery times have varied a little bit, and it's maybe less than a year for one player, more than a year for another. Spencer Schultz and I talked yesterday, and you know, Spencer's inclination potentially is that J.K. Dobbins seems a bit farther ahead than Gus Edwards right now. Sure, I mean, you never really know, but you know, with the stuff we've seen about J.K. Dobbins, yeah, I believe that. Again, not 100% confirmed, but maybe J.K. Dobbins is able to come back week one feeling 100% right. But that's the thing. I, again, would not put J.K. Dobbins out there even at 90% if he was at that in week one. I'd let him get 100% ready and then get back on the field. So there's no hesitation, no regrets there if he ends up getting injured, because the Ravens knew they did everything they could instead of rushing him back on the field. But Dobbins is a player that a lot of people had as that second year breakout last year. He averaged 6 yards a carry in his rookie year. That was best in the NFL among running backs. The only person who bested him in that was his teammate in Lamar Jackson, across the entire league, who had 6.4, I believe it was, yards per carry. So he's a player that I think is so important to this team. And I think people now, at least within the Ravens fan base, have a bit better of an appreciation for running backs than they did. And it's not just like, oh, they can bring in Le'Veon Bell and Latavius Murray and Devonta Freeman to be the top rushing offense. They were top five in a lot of categories. But for those who watch the team, for those who cover the team, et cetera, a lot of people know that it wasn't a top five rushing offense. So I think at the end of the day, J.K. Dobbins is whenever he feels right. I don't really know a time frame for that. It's so tough to put a time frame on injuries like that, especially because it's a matter of not just overcoming the physical hurdles to come with it, but the mental hurdles as well. Is J.K. Dobbins ready to cut on that knee? Is he ready to take a hit there? There are so many things that factor in. But, you know, I have confidence that these guys can come back 100% healthy, can make an impact, and get back to their former selves. And I know they do, too. They believe in themselves. And, again, hopefully when we're talking right before week one, J.K. Dobbins will be back. Ronnie Stanley will be back. Marcus Peters, Gus Edwards, all those guys. So I don't have a specific time frame here for this question, but I do think that it maybe at the very latest we see him back, I don't know, after a PUP list stint, which will be week 7. But, you know, no confirmations, no confirming stuff there. I just feel like it's too hard to put a timeline, especially at this stage when not a ton is known about his recovery at this point. But that's all I have here today on Locked On Ravens. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm going to get back here tomorrow. We'll be diving into more mini camp content for the Baltimore Ravens. So be sure to stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.